It says 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance on Mercedes-Benz Sprinter or Metris vans. With pioneering safety technologies and low total cost of ownership, Mercedes-Benz vans are the right choice for your business. Check out the full lineup of Mercedes-Benz vans starting at just $25,995. 0% financing and up to 2 years complimentary scheduled maintenance. That's van power for all. Mercedes-Benz. Vans. Born to run.
Starting at price refers to base model Metris worker cargo van. Excludes all options, taxes, title, registration, transportation charge, and dealer prep fee. Please see your dealer or go to mvvans.com for further details and exclusions.
Contact Todd and the commercial vans team at Mercedes-Benz of Fairfield, 707-430-0273.
Now, from Napa Valley, California, it's Beer Nuts featuring brewmaster Colin Kaminsky.
Welcome to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts. This is brewmaster Colin Kaminsky and Big Daddy Love here in the studio live. How you doing, John?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Colin. Also brought some great beers today we could drink, which is awesome. Had a good weekend, so I can't complain.
You know, you could, but nobody'd listen.
Well, we have a lot of beer nut listeners that listen, but I don't know if they'd listen to me complain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's why they listen, John, is because you don't complain.
That's right. If you have beer and it's, what is it, 10 o'clock in the morning?
At 10 o'clock
it's hard to complain, yeah, in Napa Valley. So what'd you do this weekend?
So I've been just absolutely buried finishing a guitar for a customer. So non-beer related, I'm building a classical guitar for a recording artist, and I've just been buried. I've been 7 days a week now for 6 weeks.
So what is a classical guitar?
Nylon strings.
Okay.
Nylon strings instead of steel strings.
There you go. Cause I didn't know that. See, I learned another thing from you, Colin.
Yeah, and so it's been quite, it's a ground up guitar design. You know, normally if somebody comes in, they say, hey, I want a guitar just like one you've already made. And I've got all the tooling and everything. But this time it wasn't. This time she's having some issues with her shoulders and her back, and she wanted to redesign the instrument in such a way that she could feel it better.
All right, well, I have a geeky beer nut question, and I'm going to go ahead and throw it at you to see. It's fairly new.
Okay.
I've never heard of it. I've drank a lot of beers. Lupulin dust. Have you ever heard of that? They put it in one of these beers that I brought. And I read that, and I've never heard of that.
So if the hop cone itself, we call them hop cones, but it's actually a flower, and it looks like a little mini green pine cone. The different parts of the flower have names. So there's the petals, which are what make it look like a cone. But the gland that makes the oil, that makes all of those aromas and flavors we like, is called the lupulin gland. So what some of these hop companies are doing is they're separating out all the leafy material, like the petals, and the stem material. And what they're trying to leave is just the lupulin gland. And the idea is to get more of those aromatics without the grassy chlorophyll character. And they call it lupulin dust.
Okay. So it's basically whatever's left over from them destroying the petals from
the
cone.
Yeah, basically they shred the cone and separate the lightest parts away and take the oiliest parts.
Okay, because I've never heard of that before.
It's a relatively new thing. Okay. It hasn't been around very long. People are trying to find all sorts of ways of modifying hops right now. There's lots of hop oils being made, lots of hop distillations, hop extracts, and we're seeing a lot of it. And a lot of it is to deal with the fact that we lose so much beer that gets absorbed into the hops and thrown away because the hopping rates have gotten so high.
So they're like little sponges.
Yeah, and
so somebody's
actually and 20 years ago, putting putting 3 pounds in 7 barrels, you know, so just under a half pound a barrel was considered a really hoppy beer. Now there's a lot of people doing 2 pounds per barrel, so 14 pounds in 7 barrels. And so it's become more, we're losing more and more beer to the hops that we throw away at the end of the process. And so there's everybody's trying to figure out a way around this. And lupulin dust is one of the new ways, yeah.
Wow. I didn't really think that the actual hop that you put in the beer would actually suck up the beer.
A lot of beer.
Really?
Yeah, you lose a lot
of beer.
Like
little
tops.
Beer drinkers.
Yep, they really are. Yeah.
That's pretty funny.
And that's probably why the cattle like the that part of. So a lot of what we waste in the brewery, we can feed to animals. And when you feed the hop cones back to cattle, they just love it.
Yeah, I know that at Downtown Joe's, they feed them to the pigs, some pig farmer. And then what's really cool about it, right, then Joe buys the pig that was been fed his beer waste, and then
when
he sells it, which is pretty cool. It's all like a one big round and round.
When I was beer. There and for about 8 years before I was there, it all went to the same cattle farmer at a winery here. And every year he would sell all the calves every spring except for two. And then they would take two cattle and use them for a big winery party every year.
Wow.
But after I left, I don't know what they did with the spent grains, yeah.
Yeah, I heard it was a pig. But.
In the beginning, we had a pig farmer that was out in American Canyon in a section of the road. He had a little farm, pig farm out there in a section of the road that's now road. The farm's gone. And he had... He raised the pigs and had four little kids, and suddenly he was young, you know, early 30s. Suddenly, his wife passed away, and he couldn't take care of the farm and all the kids, and so he moved back home and to where his family was, and got a farm there where he could be closer to family. Oh. So that was kind of a tragic story.
So talking about all this dust, should we try the beer?
Yeah, go ahead. Break it out. Let's see what we got.
So this one is Hop Bullet. I haven't seen it. My son picked it up for me because he's always in Chico because his girlfriend there.
Sierra Nevada.
Yeah, Sierra Nevada. So it's Hop Bullet. It's a double IPA, which I usually go for. And it comes in a 12-ounce can, and it's kind of tan. Pretty much looks like a Coors Light, but with a different logo. This is Sierra Nevada, then the Hop Bullet's right in the middle. And
it doesn't look like Sierra Nevada. Really,
it does
at
not.
All. I would not recognize it. No green.
Yeah, no yep. green. It does have a hop, but it's like a very low key silvery hop, silvery gold looking. I don't know. I read about it enough. I want to try it. So I know we don't normally go with the strong ones first, but I think today is the day we do. So it's just a regular can. Color looks pretty light.
Yeah, very very light.
I want you to go ahead and smell it first, Colin, because my nose is a little stuffed up today.
Uh-oh. It smells delicious. Not quite as overwhelmingly hoppy as a double can be. Nice balanced. Still smells like beer. You know, there's a hop called Willamette, and for some reason, whenever I smell Willamette, I think of beer. And I was talking to a friend of mine about that, and he says, you know, for the longest time, Budweiser was the largest user of Willamette.
Well, yeah, you know, I got to go home, like, on 80 up to Fairfield, and when they're brewing, you can smell it, the whole freeway
smells. It smells like wort, yeah.
Yeah, the whole, I mean, it's not a little bit, it's like, wow.
And you know, they're brewing 15 batches a day at that facility.
Wow.
So, yeah.
They're putting through some hops and some barley and they use rice, which is an adjunct, right?
Yeah, they use rice. They won't release what percentage they use as rice. Do you remember the time you and I visited and we got to see the railroad car full of rice waiting to be received?
Yeah. They have a lot of cool stuff there too. They have the bar. I've talked about it before, but there's a little bar inside, and also they do music. I think it's the last Friday of every month.
You know, I've never been there for music, but I've had lots of dinners in that little tasting room.
Mm-hmm. So how do you like the beer? It looks pretty crisp and pretty clean to me. I thought it'd be more hoppier just because I read about the hop dust. I figured it'd be like concentrated hop juice, but
You know, it aroma wise, it's really balanced. Let me try to taste it.
Yeah, it's good. I like it a lot. I could see myself drinking these. But it's not as hoppy as I thought. I thought it would be double IPA. It'd be super
over. You know what? It just like what I would expect out of Sierra Nevada is it's very well balanced.
Refreshing.
Yeah, it's not overwhelmingly sticky. It's not overwhelmingly grapefruit.
There is a little bit of that grapefruit, though.
The malt character is really dry, so it's not cloyingly sweet. It's just a nice, refreshing little beer.
I'm going to pour me another one.
What percentage is it?
You know what? I haven't looked yet. I'll take a look at this can right now, see if it's on there.
It tastes really light, which makes it scary. I can see it from here.
You can see it? Because I can't see it.
Oh, nope. Alcohol by volume, 8%.
Okay.
So the low end of double IPAs anymore.
Yeah, I usually like, I found that I've usually like a 7 to 9% for some reason is usually my go-to beer. And I guess that'd be usually a double IPA or a IPA that's higher in volume and alcohol.
Yeah, so
it's weird.
For me, all the way up to 8, I've always called an IPA, with 6.5 being what I consider normal. And then 8 to 10, I call a double. And then above 10, I call a triple.
Yeah. Yeah, so this one's a good one. I'd go ahead and recommend that. I don't know if you're going to be able to find this one.
I kind of like it. A hot
easily,
bullet.
But you'll be able to find it. And I also was wondering, you know, since the torpedo that they do, they put it in the torpedo and they use it and they suck all the hops and they brew it through the machine. You have more of a technical mind than I do. But those are really good, those torpedoes. I can't stay away from those things.
So the Sierra Nevada was trying to find a way to be able to separate the hops and the beer better and make that process happen quickly but also be really consistent. And they came up with an idea that they call a torpedo. And every description I've ever heard of it didn't tell me what it was like. And so imagine so they have these really big tanks that they're trying to dry hop. What they do is they bring a smaller tank in on wheels next to it. And the smaller tank is maybe, a third the size of a car. Okay, so a big tank. And when you open the tank can be pressurized. When you open the lid on the tank, inside of it, it looks like a coffee percolator. There's a big basket that's full of hops. And what they do is they pump beer into the bottom of it and up through the middle. And it sprays out over the hops and falls back down to the bottom. And so the beer is not only being pumped in a circle that way, but then it's being exchanged with the tank. So inside it's a big basket of hops that the beer is percolating through, just like a coffee percolator.
Wow. I mean,
and they call it, their name for it, they've always had, has been a torpedo, and they use it on a lot of different beers, but the brand Torpedo was because they liked that piece of equipment so much they decided to name a beer after it.
Yeah, that beer is really good. That's usually the one, if I see it up there and it's on you know, a fairly good price, I'll go ahead and pick me up a six-pack of those because those things always are a hit at every party. Anywhere I go, if you bring a torpedo, it's kind of a signature craft beer to bring because everyone knows it's popular enough but not super popular where people can, you know, still say, hey, that's a cool beer. And, you know, a lot of these little breweries like we've been talking about, Colin, that you think are little breweries are actually bought out by InBev or – know, Anheuser-Busch, what we've been talking about, they just buy out these little guys. And anyone that wants to go to the brewery, you go in there and you'll see some of these labels like 10 Barrel, and you'll be like, wow, I thought this was just an independent brewery. But no, actually, they've been under the umbrella of InBev, which is interesting how they're getting bought out still.
Well, and AB Fairfield is a great place to look when you go on the tour there because that plant specializes in doing the specialty beers that AB InBev owns. So it's one of the places that does random things. Most of the big Budweiser breweries only do a couple of different brands, But down there, I've been there when they've been brewing Tecate. I've been there when they've been brewing a bunch of the specialty labels.
Yeah, and they'll have them on tap, too, which is unusual. You know, sometimes you'll go there and they'll have bottles, but they have a lot of beer on tap, at least seven or eight beers that are on tap there, and they have a nice bar. It's kind of a hidden spot. I mean, if you know, they have TVs and events that go on all the time, and I think a car show that's coming up this weekend or next weekend, which will be good.
When I go there, I always have Budweiser, just the regular Budweiser. Yeah. That's
a staple, right?
That's the first thing I always have. It's always a good reminder to me of how good they are at keeping the quality together. Lately, the recipe has been changing. And so when I go there, I've been kind of looking for the recipe changes because it was so the same recipe for so much of my life. When InBev bought Budweiser, kind of a hostile takeover kind of thing, they took a bunch of the Willamette out, and it suddenly, instead of tasting German and spicy, it tasted fruity to me. And, you know, we're talking subtle changes that maybe most people wouldn't notice.
No, I noticed. But it
was surprising to me. And since then, they've been sneaking Willamette back in. And I remember one of the hop growers was telling me that at the time there was 22,000 acres of hops in cultivation in the United States. 15,000 of it was Willamette. And when Budweiser changed their recipe, they had to pull 4,000 acres out.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's like, we don't need Willamette anymore. Yeah, right. Like, what do you mean you don't need it? Wow.
Yeah.
So what'd they change it to? Do we know?
You know, they would probably tell you if you asked. I've never asked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, there's a good tour. It's $10.
Does it cost? Yeah.
It's $10. Yeah, but you get like two or three beers. I mean, so it doesn't really cost because you're getting paid back in beer, and then you're getting paid back in cool knowledge. And it's really cool. It's kind of a spaceship looking thing. I mean, because it's that big. The tanks that they have are so huge and enormous. It kind of puts you into a state of euphoria when you look up. It's kind of like that vertigo, like how far these things go up. And, you know, they tell you it's one of the most expensive ones. We have the most expensive one is in Fairfield, not because of the equipment or anything. It just had to be for earthquake. So they had to do special springs underneath the whole building.
And also stuff
they had to do.
When they installed it, they expanded the brew house maybe 8 years ago now, and they installed a new mash tun. And at the time, it was the largest mash tun in North America.
Oh, okay.
And it has more square footage than my house.
Hmm. No wonder you can smell those.
It's a big
that wart it's coming a over the freeway.
Big mash tun.
Well, I brought some more beer, too. But I don't know if we have time before we go to break right now. But I went to a brewery in Sassoon, and I was really surprised and happy about it.
Which brewery?
It's called Symmetry Brewery, and it's been about 8 months. I talked to one of the bartenders for a little bit, and they do a lot of the, you know, the one that the pull the handle. I always pronounce it wrong.
The beer engine, the hand pump?
Yeah, the hand pump, our beer engine, and they had some cool stuff on there. I guess the brewmaster went to Europe, and you know, he traveled. He's one of those, you know, people that want to figure out exactly what style, and those are like his little babies, you know. So one had your favorite cucumber in it, infused cucumber, right? Another one had fresh raspberries.
So raspberries are a traditional beer ingredient that good. I kind of like.
Yeah. I tried it.
Framboise, one of my favorite styles.
Cucumber. Just on, you know, I should have tried it just so I can make fun of you about it. But the other one that's coming out that I can't wait is, I don't know if you ever, you probably have, Jack Daniel's, what they call them, Stones. Jack Daniel's Stones. So I talked to the bartender. Basically, it's just chopped up barrels of whiskey barrels that they float.
Oh, uh-huh.
In the stout. Have you ever heard of that process where they do it's called Stones?
You know, I haven't heard it called that, but yeah, I've heard of reprocessing barrels into all sorts of shapes. Cubes is what we call them.
Okay. So yeah, then they just float that on top of the beer. And like I said, the traditional hand pump is usually, it pumps the carbonation. You want to get the technical terms and all this other stuff about the hand pump. I mean, I can kind of explain how it does. It's kind of, pumps air into the glass from the bottom up.
So what's going on is it pours kind of like a traditional stout faucet. And the nitrogen push stout faucets are kind of a copy of the old beer engine. But basically what happens is the keg isn't under pressure. So when you pull on that pump, you're actually pulling a vacuum on the beer and sucking it up into the faucet. And then it goes and gets pushed out the spray nozzle. And the spray nozzle is kind of like the foam wand for an espresso machine. And so it sprays it out and it strips all the bubbles out while you're pumping it. And so that makes it cascade like a stout faucet.
Yeah, and it's usually a little bit cooler.
Normally they're served a little bit warmer than normal.
At
50 degrees, and it's normally by the time it gets in your glass, the carbonation level is much lower, but it has all that creaminess built out of the head.
I kind of like it, and it says more like European style how they drink it, a little bit warmer.
It's very traditional British way of serving beer. Yeah. So the old Grundys, the big tanks that used to be below the pubs, would have 219 gallons of beer in them, and they would hand pump the whole thing out. Now, in order for it to work, the hand pump that you have to let air in the backside. So, and air spoils beer. So you have to serve the vessel. You know, now normally we hand pump out of small vessels like 15 gallons now, but you have to be able to serve all of that within a few days. Or else you just ruin it. And so that's one of the things. And in the last 10 years, you see people putting sterile filters on the air inside, the air inlet side to try to keep organisms out. I've heard of people just under really light pressure letting nitrogen back in the backside.
So Symmetry in Sassoon is a great little brewery. It's kind of in a shopping mall type deal, but it's like a local brewery. It had a really nice local feel. You know what I mean? Some of those breweries you go to is very industrial. You feel very out of place. I felt very at home at this place, and all the people there were very nice. And they also had a stout that I tried, which was on the engine that we've been talking about. And they put coffee grounds in bags like tea, and then they put that into the beer. So you not only are you getting the nice stout, but you're getting a lot of the coffee flavors from basically a tea bag with ground up coffee in there, which was really, really cool.
You know, coffee infused stouts have been around as long as I can think of, because the flavors are so synergistic. I have to be really careful if I get too much caffeine into a stout. It makes me dizzy. So I have to really calculate the caffeine carefully.
Something else you wouldn't think about is really counting the caffeine that's actually going to be in the stout, you know, that is being infused from
beans. Right? I've had homebrewed stouts with coffee in it that have made me downright jittery and dizzy.
Yeah. Well, anything coffee, if you have too much, or if you have a special strong brew, I've had those sometimes, those super strong brews. Dutch Brothers makes a pretty good strong one. And
I'm not real sensitive to that. I have a quad espresso every morning.
Yeah, so I remember that you used to have those and used to complain, hey, who worked last night? They didn't clean their espresso machine. Now I got to clean it and I got to make my own espresso and I got to make your beer for your restaurant? Come on. clean the machine, Big John. I'm like, all right, I'll clean the machine next time. So
But you guys got rid of that machine, I heard.
Yeah, I guess it broke down, and then Joe's like, well, we don't really sell any. I mean, there's two coffee spots down the street, right?
Right.
Within a block. The massive Starbucks, right?
Right.
And then you got the little Napa Roasting Company that's right down the street. So the space that it took up, which is basically a lot of space for that big unit, was not, for me, was not ever worth, you know, especially when the Starbucks moved in, worth the space, if that makes any sense.
I mean, put
more liquor.
Make more espresso.
Put more liquor bottles up there. You know, I do kind of miss it sometimes because me and the other bartender would be late at night. Every once in a while, I'd be like, "Are you ready for espresso to keep it going?" You know, talking about 12 o'clock, we got another 2 hours plus another half hour cleanup. We used to make those too, just to get it going.
Espresso martinis too.
Yeah, those were really good too. Yeah. I never really thought of that, but you know, because I don't drink espresso martinis, but they are good. I mean, I sold a lot of those things.
Yeah, I've
a lot.
I don't know how you guys were making them at night, but I've done. You know, so you make the martini, then you pour, you float the espresso down to the bottom, in a chocolate rimmed glass.
Keep it layered. Try to keep it layered.
Yeah, layer it into the bottom.
Yeah,
you pour it in second, but put it at the bottom.
Well, we're not going to get paid unless we pay some of these people. We need to, you know, pay some bills, Colin. What do you think? Open another beer. I mean, we could open another beer.
We'll have a long second segment, but we can do that. You're listening to KVON 1440 Beer Nuts.
The A's lose, but the Giants win. And this is a sports report with Ira C. Smith. The Oakland Athletics at home last night against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim lost 9-7. So the magic number for the A's to clinch a spot in the playoffs still stands at 7. It's been there now for about 3 days. Tonight, it'll be Anderson getting the start for the A's against Pena. 7 o'clock is airtime for the broadcast on KVON. That series concludes tomorrow afternoon with the Angels coming in to battle the Oakland A's. 12:30 airtime on the broadcast on KVON tomorrow. San Francisco Giants last night defeated the San Diego Padres 5-4, as the Giants have won 4 of their last 5, and they close out that series tonight. Kelly looks for his first win for the Giants. He is 0-2. The Giants are idle tomorrow. The San Jose Earthquakes fired their first-year head coach, Michael Sturry. The team is at the bottom of the Major League Soccer standings with 4 wins, 16 losses, and 8 ties. They will host Atlanta tonight. That's one of 6 remaining matches, and the Earthquakes did name Steve Ralston as their interim head coach. San Antonio Spurs hired Brent Berry as vice president of basketball operations. The Edmonton Oilers in hockey signed Darnell Nurse to a 2-year contract. Not too much on the local sports scene today, but in soccer, the Calistoga boys are at Roseland Collegiate Prep, while the Calistoga girls will be at Tomales, and Napa Valley College women's volleyball team is hosting Los Medanos. Coming up Friday night at Memorial Stadium, it's homecoming for the Vintage Crushers, hosting Casa Grande of Petaluma. The broadcast on KVON begins at 6:45 Friday night. Justin Sin is home Friday night to Petaluma. That broadcast will be on KVYN 99.3 FM beginning at 6:45.
Do you like Spanish music?
Oh, yeah!
I mean, real Spanish music. The latest hits. Oldies.
Muchachito.
Mariachi.
Por mujer.
Salsa.
Decide.
Then listen to me, Nicolás de Luna de Haro, every Sunday morning on KVON 1440 AM.
Smart Radio.
The best music.
Interviews,
news,
and a whole lot more.
Domingos con Nico, La Voz del Valle, every Sunday morning at 6.
Se habla español.
Beer is good, beer is good, beer is good. That's soft. Beer is good, beer is good, beer is good.
Let's go drink some beer.
Geeking out with Beer Nuts.
Welcome back to KVON 1440. It was a quick break today.
Okay, we got time enough to pour a beer. It was a good enough break for me.
Well, there you go. What did you pour while we were on break there?
Okay, it's Lagunitas, which, you know, we're staying local today. It's a limited release Lagunitas Mozango, and it's brewed with Mosaic hops. And mango, so I guess that's where they got their name. What do you think, Colin?
Yeah, that'd be my guess.
Mozango? Right? Mosaic and mango, put in one word. I don't know. I just saw it when I went to the local store, and it just stood out. It has kind of looks like suns, like a sun ray, but it's actually a mango. And
well, on the bottom side's a hop.
Yeah.
It's a gold hop. Yeah, so it's
kind of a trick.
The little bottle,
for subliminal messaging, which I'm totally into. So it looks like the sun, with a mango and a hop at the bottom.
The flesh is weak, but the spirit is willing. So what's at the heart of it? It's the patient and diligent servant, or the committed messenger, through their many routes and vessels, the salient soldier slinging suds on the front lines daily, or the very brewers themselves. The answer is, we can't tell you here. From seed to sprout to fruit and back to seed, we're all tangled on the same vine. And while the fruit is momentary, the roots hold on for another season. It's all just a matter of perspective. How's the weather out there? Give us a call, 707-769-4495. Cheers.
All right.
That's one of those weirder labels we've read, aren't
Yeah, but it almost sounded like a poem, but then it gave you some information and column. So that was kind of cool. It was kind
of they want to know what the weather's like.
Yeah. It's always sunny.
I don't know. Should we call them, John?
Yeah. IBUs are 29.5 and the OG. Can you explain the OG is 1.07, and alcohol is 7.7. Let's get all this out of the way before we drink this beer.
Go ahead. So OG is the original gravity. That's how much sugar you extracted from the barley before the yeast got to it. And so,
why would a normal drinker need to know the OG? I understand that IBU. Go ahead and explain what the IBU is.
That's how bitter it is. So the international bittering units.
So if it's a bitter beer and you don't like bitter beer or hoppy beer, whatever you want to call it, you're not going to look for a high number. But if you do, like us, we're going to look for a higher number. So I mean, I get that one. You know, I get the alcohol. I get. You know, SRM?
The standard research method of checking color.
Which is color. So the higher the number, the darker the beer, the lower the number.
The lighter the beer.
The lighter the beer. So I get that. So, like, if somebody just printed numbers, because numbers are the universal language, right? So right. You could just look at the numbers and tell you exactly what kind of beer you're going to drink. But this OG, I'm not really, I don't understand it. Like,
well, so there's roughly a quarter of a million homebrewers in the U.S. now, and they like to know the OG.
Okay, but for an average beer drinker,
I don't think for the average beer drinker the OG is all that important.
What does it pertain to for me? Sweetness, or what is it exactly?
Well, so OG is the potential to produce alcohol. The FG, the OG minus the FG, is how much residual sugars there's left. So I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it. You got me on the spot here, John.
I know. Just for like average people.
I know, and I'm trying to take this out of brewing terminology. So the original gravity is how much sugar you start with. The final gravity is how much sugar you finish with. Now, you can't just look at the final gravity and know whether it's a sweet or a dry beer. You can in wines, because grapes are a lot simpler than beer. You can have a really good idea of how sweet a wine is based on the final gravity. But in brewing, how much you fermented has something to do as well. So if you have a really high original gravity and a really low final gravity, the beer might still be perceived as sweet. Because of that high original gravity.
So it's basically deal with how sweet it, or how not sweet it is, basically.
Yeah, but you need both numbers. You can't okay, so without the final gravity, the original gravity doesn't help you.
Okay, that's just basically for homebrewers.
For homebrewers.
If they want to reproduce a Mozango.
Or get an idea, you know, an idea. What did it say the final gravity was?
They didn't list
the FG?
No.
So they put the alcohol percentage, and you can calculate it backwards from that. But
so it's like but I'm not
gonna
equation.
I'm not gonna pull my phone out and do that right now. I have a beer application on my phone that'll reverse that. But
wow, so this is very mango smelling. Smells just like you would think a mango would smell. Pretty sweet. A little bit of that mango. What is that mango? That I don't know. It's got that weird. I don't want to say grapefruit, but kind of a sweet grapefruit.
You know, smell. To me, so mango is one of the aromas that we find in Mosaic hops. And so that's why they paired them together, to bring out more mango.
Okay, so if they're using a certain kind of hop, like this one is Mosaic, so that it has a mango hint to it. So the brewer said, well, why don't we do a mango beer because it
I think that's probably what happened. But to me, the mango to me, instead of giving me the aromatics of the mango that the hop has, I get more of the fleshy character of the mango. I don't know if I call this a success, a successful experiment. I would say it's a unique beer. It's a fun beer. I don't hate it. As far as experiments go, I think as a brewer, I would have gone, yeah, okay, I did it.
This is a limited release for a reason? It's going to be limited?
Yeah, maybe, yeah. It just didn't come together into a little piece of magic like beer can sometimes. And
yeah, you know, most of the beer we like, and this one is, for me, it's just like, I can not like it, I can like it.
It's that's here. Exactly where I, it's not that I don't like it, it's that there's nothing magic about it.
Yeah, so they come in a 22-ounce bottle if you guys want to go out there and experience this Mangzango for yourself. I think I like it a little bit more than Colin does, just because I know Colin, for one thing, doesn't like putting anything else in his beer besides his lips. You know, he doesn't like peanut butter. He doesn't like
cucumbers.
He doesn't like mangoes. He doesn't like
some of those fruits, though, I find interesting. Mango is a fruit that's got some interesting characters. Raspberry has some interesting characters. And some of those ingredients, you start to wonder. Basil. Basil is one that I think is really interesting.
I like basil, by the way. So I barbecue with all the time. So, I mean.
But basil in beer is really interesting.
What about sage? I've drank in a sage beer for $3.90. I think the brewery. I don't know what the name of the brewery was, but I remember the beer. And I used to have my wife out there listening right now go out and grab me some. And it was called 395. I think it was from 395 highway out there, and it had sage in it. And I loved that beer. You know what? I'm gonna have to go look for it to see if it's even out there anymore. It was great beer, and
I like sage tea, so I might like sage beer.
Yeah, that's the first one I've seen. You know, I don't see any more sage beer, but when it came out, I used to buy, you know, three or four of the 22ers, and 395 was a label. Or it was the brewery, but I'll do some research later and see if I can find one and bring it to the show.
Yeah,
It worked really good. Like you're talking about with the basil, the sages work awesome. And yeah, so the Mangzango is a no-go for Colin, and it's a so-so Mangzango for me.
Yeah. Yep. I it wouldn't bug me if somebody poured me a bottle. But I don't think I would go out and buy a bottle. That's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, 22s aren't as cheap as they used to be.
I give it a solid 3.5 hop rating.
Yeah. Yeah, everyone has their apps now, right? Yeah. I mean, how many apps are there? I mean, there's a Tap Hunter app where you put a special beer in, like, oh, I'm looking for Mangzango, and then it'll show you exactly where it's pouring on tap in some of these tap houses. And then there's another app where you rate the beer, and then there's an app, you know, for different styles of beer. I mean, there's an app for like everything to do with beer, brewery apps, all kinds of apps.
You know, I've been trying to get the Beer Advocate owner on the air for a long time. I've known him since the beginning of Beer Advocate. And
Beer Advocate, for people who don't know, is
one of those rating applications. Okay. And 50% of it was bought by Budweiser recently. And he took a lot of heat in the industry. You know, hey, how can you sell out? And, you know, basically it put him in the position of having a bunch more resources, having a steady paycheck. I mean, you can see why he had to do it. And I really have tried to get him on the air both before that happened to talk about the app and what I think is good about it and what I think is bad about it. But also...
So what do you think is good about it? What do you think is bad about it?
No. Well, it's good that it gets people talking about beer and getting people trying to subjectively evaluate beer.
And trying different beers. I've seen women with the app that came to the bar, and then they say, hey, I don't have that beer on my, you know, no one's rated that beer yet, like a brand new beer that used to brew. And so they'd order that just because there was nobody had it on the beer review yet. It's brand new.
What I didn't like about it is it was clearly fan biased. So you would look at a review for a beer that was decent but not great, And if the brewery had a lot of fans
or bots,
it had no. I'm pretty sure they were good.
Oh, there's bots out there.
Now they actually fought that really hard to make sure that you like you're not allowed.
You?
Yeah, that you were you. And I think he did a good job at that. I don't know. I'd still like to get him on. He moved from Santa Rosa to Oregon, so it's a lot harder to get him on board now. But I would like to get him on board and have him
explain it
And defend him. And I'm a little more critical of these rating sites. You know, basically, one of the things that I don't like about it is if you have a beer that doesn't fit into a style, like Moonlight Brewing's Death and Taxes. Might be one of my favorite beers in the world. Just absolutely delicious.
It is a good beer. And but, usually when I'm in Sonoma, I'll even look to hunt that down because it's all over that area.
But it doesn't fit into a style. So he gets terrible reviews.
Would it be like and dark lager or porter? What style would you jam it into?
That I would jam it into a Schwartz beer.
Okay.
Is what I would jam it
into. And a Schwartz beer is traditionally a German what?
A German dark lager. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not a Schwartz beer. It's not trying to be a Schwartz beer. So when you try to jam it into that style, it doesn't do well. But the question is, when you sit down at the bar, is this a delicious pint of beer that you really enjoy? And it is. And you sit down at the bar and you go, wow, I haven't had one of these in a long time. That is so good. I'm glad Brian's still making this. And that doesn't come through in the rankings. You know, it ranks better than I think if that exact same beer wasn't named Moonlight, because Brian's been in the industry for so long, he's got his fans that rate it high. If that beer was a brand new brewery and they released it, these beer rating people would rate it really low because it doesn't fit a style. And as much as, you know, Gordon Strong has done amazing things for this industry, making the beer judge certification guidebook, the styles that he's created and researched so diligently and defined and refined over the last 25 years, I think are amazing. I think he's done great work. But what he's done is pigeonholed everybody. And you know, what if I wanted to make I don't know. What if I wanted to make a raspberry basil porter? Well, there isn't a style for that.
Where would
So people are going to pick up the style guide and they're going to go, well, gosh, it's not supposed to taste like raspberries, and it does. So it's a bad porter.
So these guys are going.
But the question is it a good beer? Is it a good beer? And if it's a good beer, there should be a way to give it a good rating.
Okay, so they're going through
the style guide doesn't give us that option.
So they're going through a checkbook, right?
All right.
Or you're doing a porter. Oh, it's got to be roasty. It's got to be malty.
It's got to be this amount of alcohol.
It's got to be this color.
It's got to be this bitter.
Smell like this. I mean,
and I don't know what the right word is. They relish in being able to take points away. And instead of just what the overall impression should be the most important thing, the overall impression should just be 80% of your score.
Right.
That 20% of your score should be, did you fit into some style guide? And 80% should be, is this a delicious beer? And if you're not a delicious beer, I don't care if you hit the style exactly. And if you are a delicious beer, I don't care what style it is.
Yeah, if you like it, you like it, no matter what they put on the label.
My rule of thumb is if I start tasting a beer and trying to figure out if I like it or not, and the beer is all the way gone before I've decided, it was probably delicious. And if I ordered it again, then it was certainly delicious.
You know, I know.
And if I order the third pint, then I know I like the beer.
You know, the beer I know you like is when you go to your house and I see it in your refrigerator.
Right.
That's the ones you like.
Well, you know, because I so rarely buy beer.
We know this, Colin.
Yeah, I rarely buy beer. So if I buy beer, it's something very special. Something that I wouldn't find otherwise.
Well, I mean, you've been in the beer industry so long, so not only do you make beer, but you have all kinds of beer connections. You guys trade beer. I mean, I can see why it'd be hard for you to buy beer because you're so used to creating it or getting it without using money.
The last time I bought a bunch of beer, I bought a couple hundred dollars worth of Russian River beers, so I could trade them for beers that I can't buy.
Yeah,
yeah, you know.
Yeah,
and that was when we got to do all that Northeast IPA tasting.
Yeah, that was cool.
That was fun. That was that Trillium just turned out to be one of my favorite breweries. And
so you're gonna have to drink the rest of that mango so I can fill it up with another. We have a cider.
Okay, hold on.
We got beer nuts calling in, chiming
in. Yeah, we do. I just got a bunch of messages in a row here.
Oh, this is not good.
I think I stirred everybody
this
up.
This is usually not good.
So Mammoth Brewing Company does IPA 395.
Oh, okay.
With Sage.
Good. That is a great beer out there. Anyone listening, please send Mammoth Brewing 395 beer to Beer Nuts located in Napa.
You know, Mammoth is a good group of guys. I like that brewery.
Yeah, I did go to that brewery once.
And I've talked to them a lot. So, and they do travel up here. So maybe we can get them on the air.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
And bring that 395. So this one is Golden State Cider. And I guess it's in Sebastopol, which is basically, they call it West Sonoma, whatever that means. Is there like an East Sonoma, West Sonoma?
I don't know.
I guess they just want to have the Sonoma name. Sonoma's probably more recognizable than Sebastopol.
When they first opened, they came on the show.
Did they?
Yeah.
Was I on the show?
No, you weren't here that day. It was just me.
I was
and
on a nut then?
It was just me and them. I didn't have a co-host that day at all.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'd like to give a shout-out to, you know, my dad's out there listening. Just got out of the hospital. My wife, my son's asleep. And we got some new beer nut listeners from the bar.
Oh, good.
Darwin, I think, is listening for the first time. I've been asking him to listen to the show for like years. So today's his first day.
Welcome to the family.
Yep. Now you're a beer nut. Now we're going to drink this beer.
Well, this one's not a beer. This one's a cider.
It's a cider-ish beer. Well, you know, beer nuts, it comes and goes. It's the Mighty Dry Cider from Golden State Cider. And you said you've drank these a few times. I've never drank this one. But what came to mind, which was totally not what it is, was the Golden Road.
Oh, uh-huh.
The brewery out in Los Angeles. And it's nothing to do with anything like that.
No, it doesn't
like
have
that.
Anything to do. So the other one that it reminds me of, we've had Ale Industries on a couple of times, and they do Golden State of Mind.
Yes, I was on that one. That was a good one, too.
Yep.
Yeah. And I want to stop by there. I think they're in Oakland, right, by the Fruitvale Station? Is that?
Yeah, by Fruitvale, yeah.
Yeah, I drove by them, and then I ended up going to Drake's.
So there's two owners, and one of the girls I work with is dating one of the owners. So I get to try their beers all the time right now. She brings them in and leaves them in the employee lounge refrigerator there.
That goes together with not paying for beer.
Yeah, right. All right.
So this one has no sugar added, which is cool. No water added, which is interesting. No gluten, and no bad juju is in this.
No bad juju. You can't add that bad juju.
No. Crafted with 100% crisp West Coast apples. So, I mean, it's pretty much as fresh as you can get because they're close, and they all use natural ingredients. And the liquor is pretty good. It's 6.9.
Which is actually surprising because that's apples usually don't give you enough sugar to hit that high.
Yeah. And this one's in a 16-ounce, pretty much basic white can. And it's the Mighty Dry Cider. I know they have a whole line of ciders. If anyone wants to get on their website, just go to Golden State.
When they were here, I tried three of them, and this one was my favorite of the three.
Okay, cool.
But I like things that are really dry.
Yeah.
And this is really dry.
Yeah, when it comes to like Brut or anything like that, champagne.
I like dry champagnes. I like dry beers. And
me too. So this is my first time trying it. It was actually left for the new brewer at Downtown Joe's, JJ, and I stole it from him. So here we go. Here's to you, JJ.
I think these guys are doing a decent job. Yeah, it's really dry, huh?
I know who would like this. She's listening. Yeah, because this is a little bit higher in alcohol, not as sweet. It's a great. I like it a lot. I mean, that's just usually my I might be a little biased just because I'm like you. My profile is usually dry. A little bit higher in alcohol when I buy a cider, and not sweet. So,
and it doesn't taste anything like mangoes.
Nothing like that. You got that mango right out of your mouth.
Yeah, it really did erase the mango right out of my mouth.
It did erase the mango. Yeah, and then it's cold, crisp, and
and just sour enough to make you think of apples. I like it. Yeah, it's not mushy. It's crisp,
and the color's really light.
The color's really light. Yeah,
which is interesting.
Lighter than Coors Light.
Yeah, looks like almost like water. I mean, a little bit. If you looked into the light, it looks almost like watered down apple juice, like 20 times watered down. Like just a drop of apple juice in there. I mean, it almost looks like water if you. If you look at it on the on this white surface that we're looking at.
One of the questions I've always had for these cider guys, and you never really get a good answer, is what kind of apples do you use? Because cider apples are really different varieties. The sweet, easy-tasting apples that we eat on the table usually aren't the apples that the cider guys like. They go after the weird crab apple kind of things that you would normally make into pies. And I've always wanted to find out, but they kind of get a little secretive about that when you start asking them what apples
are using. I mean, from reading the label, there's not too much to do with cider. Cider must be super easy to make, like way easier than beer. I mean,
well, there's no mashing process, right? So you grind you press the apples, take all the juice out and ferment it. So it's more like making wine. And, in fact, it takes a winemaker's bond to make cider. You can't make it with a brewer's bond.
So I know these guys, I looked them up on the internet. They start out selling at, like, fairs.
Yeah.
State fairs and, you know, markets. And they weren't really small. And then now they're big time. So.
Yeah, that was always their business model, though. Because we had them on in the beginning. And it was very clear their business model was to make a product.
Okay.
And the three they brought, they were all really good. And
I kind of wish I had like a different one of their beers just to see what, you know, what, I mean, this one is obviously I like a lot, but the different styles that they're making. I mean, one cider is hard to extrapolate on whatever else they're doing over there, you know? I mean, obviously, this one is we like, but I would like to see maybe paired with something else, maybe one of their sweeter ones, or maybe one of their lower specialty ones.
You know something. I can reach out to them again and see if we can get them back on.
Yeah, because usually we don't have cider on the show, so I thought I'd bring it. Give us a little bit different something else to talk about because we're going through a lot of beer. I mean, we've tried a lot of beer on the Beer Nuts show since
five and a half years.
Yeah. 5.5 years. So I mean, there's been a lot of beer. So. You throw a little curveball in there once in a while. And there's a lot of people that drink cider. More and more, I think, are drinking cider. What do you have on tap? Is it you have any cider? No, but we have bottles. And they still get the bottle. But I think cider on tap, for me, is just a little bit better.
So I was working with this guy. Guy was obviously a kind of a geeky homebrewer guy.
You guys made out just right then.
But,
best buddy.
He really understood all of the hardware that we had and would stay late, and I like to work late. And so I was asking him one night, hey, I need to connect this thing to this thing. What hardware are we going to have in the building? And so he goes through it all. He says, well, you're going to want an H305B, and he gives me this list of parts that I'm going to need. And I walk through this 80,000 square foot warehouse and I find everything and it all hooks up and I get it all hooked up and I decide, hey, you know, this guy's kind of okay. I'm going to get to know him.
And he knows a lot of stuff.
And I don't normally go out of my way to get to know people. I normally I'm a pretty shy person. And, so he kind of started talking to me about how he likes to run a still.
Oh, and, yeah, run a still sounds like a good guy to know.
And so I was out at Heretic, and I got the private tour of Jameel's.
Which is in Fairfield.
Continuous still, and continuous distillation is one of those things that's a little bit hard to study. There's not a lot written about it. The information on the internet is just simply wrong. And so designing a continuous still is really hard. And since I knew he liked to still, and I thought manufacturing a continuous still for distilleries would be a fun project, I figured I'd
continuously distilling liquor all
right,
on.
Right, right, right. It has a constant feed in. It's not batch process. It's continuous.
Okay.
And so I started talking to him about different ideas, bouncing it off from him. And one day he's like 4 hours late to work. And he comes over to my desk and he says, "Hey, I just went out to Heretic and I saw the still." And I said, "Oh, what did you think? Did you like this? Did you like that?" Yeah. And he said, "I took the job." What do you mean you took the job?
I'm hired.
I'm in charge of the still.
I am the still now.
So anyhow, Malcolm said as soon as he gets settled in, he's been there a month.
We're going to bring him in?
He's going to come in, and he's going to teach us about the still at Heretic. So
I'm super excited about that. We could drink something besides beer.
So what they do is they strip about half of the water off. They take beer. They strip about half the water off in the continuous still, and then they run it through a batch still after that. And so he's going to come in.
Are they making whiskey, or what are they making?
Everything.
Everything?
Well, he's most excited about gin. He's most excited about gin, but they've been doing some barrel aged whiskeys and rums and and they've been doing all sorts of things they've also talked about Malcolm's talked about running an absinthe, so they might run an absinthe as well. So on that day, John,
we get a driver.
Yeah, we have to have drivers. So
yeah. I hear you on that, but I would love for them to remake the gin.
You've been listening to KVON 1440
Beer Nuts.
Are you and your family ready for an emergency? PG&E wants you to plan ahead by mapping out escape routes and preparing a go kit in case you need to get out quickly. For more information on how to be prepared and keep your family safe, visit pge.com/safety.
Here's a song that means a lot to me. I hope you enjoy it. Well, I remember. Sorry about that. Let me catch my breath for a second. Hold on there.